As a B2B marketer, lots of the cookie-cutter content marketing advice you find online can be unhelpful. Us B2Bs have unique challenges that need unique solutions. For example, most B2B audiences are pretty smart. They're pretty clued up about the topics that they're researching. So if you're churning out generic content, that's not going to do your brand any favors. You're also probably super busy. You don't know how to prioritize content marketing or fit it into your plan. And on top of that, most B2Bs want content that generates qualified leads rather than just any old junk or just traffic. It can feel like a lot, but we've worked with a ton of B2B businesses from healthcare, financial, legal, manufacturing, even B2B e-commerce, and we've won tons of our awards for B2B content work, building immense campaigns that generate huge ROI. So today, this podcast is all about helping you generate high quality leads from B2B content marketing. Let's go.
Welcome to the Exposure Ninja Digital Marketing Podcast.
Welcome to the Exposure Ninja podcast. My name's Tim Cameron Kitchen. I'm the founder of Exposure Ninja. We're a digital marketing agency to help our clients generate more leads online. And that is exactly what this podcast is all about today. Today, we're talking about content marketing for B2Bs. Now, there's a big difference between B2B content and B2C. Whilst B2B and B2C content share a lot of similarities, there are some specific hurdles when it comes to creating B2B content that actually drives qualified leads. Firstly, the pool of topics can feel very unsexy compared to the B2C counterparts. You know, you're trying to write something that's fun and interesting and going to get loads of engagement, but the reality is you're working at a company that does accreditations, right? There's a limit to how exciting that can be. So the pool of topics can feel unsexy. I think the important thing to remember, though, is that we're still selling to a customer. This customer might be making a purchase on behalf of a business, but they're still a customer, they're still a consumer. When they finish work, they're going out to read about B2C stuff, they're choosing their products in the same way. The same pattern that makes them buy B2C stuff makes them buy B2Bs. Yes, they have to go through a different decision-making process, but they still like to be interested, they still like to be entertained and informed. So we need to keep that in mind, okay? Just because the topics might be boring doesn't mean that we need to be boring. Content is one of the best ways to convince potential customers in B2B that you're the best option for them. But there's a really important sort of nuance here. With our B2B clients, we want every piece of content we produce to communicate not just here's how to solve whatever problem that you've got, but also to educate the customer about why our client is the best option for them. So your B2B content needs to have throughout it the benefits, the USPs, the things that make you unique and stand out against your competitors. So for example, we've got a client that sells packaging, right? Like some takeaway packaging and packaging for sending stuff through the post, that type of thing. So this is a space that could feel really commoditized. And to be fair, making your business stand out in a space like this can be quite tricky. So we make sure in any content that we're producing, we're trying to push the angles that are somewhat unique for our client. For example, the level of customer service and communication they have is exceptional. They offer help and advice on the products. It's not just, hey, come and buy whatever stuff you want. They're not just a supplier, they're also a sort of advisor. The products that they sell are also really high quality and very sustainable as well. So we make sure that we're pushing this and finding ways to mention this in the content that we're producing. Now, when we started working with them, we also reviewed their lead funnel and we could see that potential customers had multiple touch points before they were converting. So they were spending some time on the website, they were maybe spending some time on social media and reviewing some emails. So what we needed to do is make sure that any content that we were producing for them sort of nudged these customers along this journey towards the purchase. How do you do that? Well, firstly, you do this by choosing the types of content to produce that are targeted at people at different stages of the funnel. You then make sure that you've got calls to action in each of these pieces that references where someone is at in the funnel. For example, if they're learning about a new type of packaging or they're maybe making the move from using unsustainable packaging to more sustainable materials and methods, we might need to educate them about that. They might not be ready to buy just there and then. They might want to get a quote first, or they might want to talk to someone first. So we need to have the right CTA for where someone is going to be in their journey based on the topic of the content that's being produced. This isn't a one-time thing. This isn't something that you just do once and then you forget about it. It's really important to continue reviewing the analytics and review the conversion rates of each of the pieces of content that you're producing to make sure that CTAs are pitched at the right level. And by the way, at this point, you might be thinking, yeah, but I can't even get sign off to do a small amount of content for my company. How can I possibly start working on a funnel-based content strategy? That just seems like something I'm never going to get sign off. We've actually produced a couple of videos about creating a marketing budget and also getting buy-in from your leadership. So we'll link those in the podcast show notes. All right, now we've covered some of the sort of foundational principles. We also need to think about some of the different tactics that the content marketing team here at Exposure Ninja use to get super qualified leads for our clients from their content. The first thing that we're going to talk about is using positioning to stand out. In an ocean full of businesses battling for your target audience's attention, it can be really difficult to communicate what makes you. This is particularly important in B2B, where so many B2Bs, particularly if they're in, let's say, less sexy industries, just come across as really boring and generic. If that's your space, fantastic, because this is low-hanging fruit. What we really need to do is find a way to make you stand out against everyone else, and preferably this way, this differentiator will have some value and meaning to your target customer, and you'll be able to find a way to communicate it very succinctly. Now, whatever we choose also needs to be authentic. It's absolutely pointless choosing something that's false. It's going to ruin customer relationship and trust. Let me give you a couple of examples. So first up, let me just give you one example. We're going to come back to some others later on. Monzo, business banking. Now, we ripped into Monzo for some of their business-focused content maybe a couple of podcasts ago. So we're sort of, being fair, we're showing both sides of the coin here. So Monzo's business banking, and by the way, if you don't know Monzo, they're like a startup business bank. They also have a consumer bank as well, but it's all app-focused. It's one of these new generation of banks. So they position themselves as... well, let me just read you the subheadline. It just works, so you can too. Now, if anyone has set up a business bank account before, or if anyone has tried to use a business bank account from one of the large corporate banks, you'll know it's an absolute nightmare. Really difficult to get things done. Customer service is horrible. Takes ages to do stuff. There's all sorts of unknown charges. You don't have features that you think you should have. You need to upgrade. Just yuck, right? So Monzo's subheadline here, it just works, so you can too, makes tons of sense to people with that context. They found a way to position themselves. Further down this page, I'm looking at the sort of the business banking landing page for Monzo. They're basically selling against the traditional experience of using a business bank. So they're talking about their award-winning customer support 24/7, which is unparalleled in the world of old school banks where, you know, if you phone up 4:30 on a Friday, they've already gone home. They're talking about free. They're talking about you can do these things free, right? Again, they're selling against people's past experience of business banking. So what is this all about? Why are we talking about this with a content strategy? Well, because they've got this very clear positioning, they know what they're selling and they know who they're selling against. That means that they can use all of these benefits in their content. Now, it turns out in Monzo's case, they actually don't. Their business content has very few CTAs in at all. And some of the stuff that we've looked at on their blog is pretty sort of aimless. But if they wanted to, they could, because they have this great, clear positioning. And this ties back to what we were saying earlier about how your content shouldn't just educate your audience on the topic, it should also educate them on why they should use you and what's different about you. You're using the topic and the information that you're sharing as a way of getting on their radar in the first place, and then you're just subtly educating them about, hey, by the way, we're actually really free and easy to use, and you don't have to go to a branch, and there's 24/7 customer support. So we need to try and keep things simple here when we're choosing our positioning. What you don't want to do is be like, yeah, there's these like 6 to 10 amazing things about us, so we're going to try and cram all of them into every single piece that we produce. Ideally, you'd have a very simple and succinct way to communicate your positioning, and that's going to make your job much easier because people just can't remember like 6 to 10 different benefits. Whereas if you can just summarize it really simply and clearly, which is not a simple thing to do, by the way, then that makes your job as a marketer so much easier. And by the way, sometimes when people go through this exercise, they update their positioning. They then look at the rest of their website and think, well, this doesn't really represent who we are at all. At that point, it's time for a website refresh or a website redesign. And if you need help with that, then you can contact the team at Exposure Ninja. Just go to our website, exposureninja.com, and click the contact button to talk to our dev team about a new rebuild if you need it. And also, if you're struggling to come up with your positioning, we have an amazing service called the Brand Accelerator, which helps you figure out by talking to your customers what sort of positioning messages are most likely to resonate with them that are sort of core to what you do. The next pillar of our plan is to teach your audience something new. Your content should be really useful to your audience, not just talking about you and the things that are most interesting to you. Okay, we should be aiming to move our audience towards their goals somehow. If they know the scale of their problem, we need to help them with some of the specifics in their problem. If they don't know the scale of their problem, we need to help them identify the scale of their problem. That's a sort of a good rule of thumb to work from. Now, you're going to have two types of content here. You're going to have content that is targeted for people who actually know what their problem is and they know the solution. So for those, you're going to be targeting maybe search-focused content. I'm looking at a piece here, which is, it's not the most thrilling topic, I've got to be honest. It's called The Power of Combining ISO 27001 and ISO 9001. Now, this ranks for ISO 9001 versus ISO 27001. And these are certifications that you can get. Now, the business that this blog is on sells a platform about certifications. This is a relevant topic for their target audience. So they've written this piece, which is for people who know that they've got, you know, they know that they need to explore these certifications, and they're comparing different ones. They're comparing, you know, they're working out whether they need to have both of them. And it's a really detailed piece. It explains everything about it, explains why this business is a great partner for this journey. And then there are calls to action throughout. So this is a perfect implementation of a piece of content that's targeted to someone who knows what problem they've got. The other type of content that B2Bs will produce is content for people that maybe don't know that they've got a problem, or even if they know they've got a problem, they don't know that you are the potential solution. So let me explain another example. So every year, Slack, the workplace communication messenger app, produces these state of work trends. And these are reports where they survey different segments of their audience to get some unique statistics and insights on what's going on. So for example, they do this across engineering. They do this across, I think, maybe sales and marketing and things like this, right? And they produce these detailed reports, which you can then go onto their website and download. They're behind an email capture form. So this is the sort of content that's targeting people who maybe don't think that they need Slack, or maybe they're already using Slack, but they're not using it to its full benefit. And the point of this is, hey, you want to come to this website for this interesting, unique insight that we have that you don't have. And then when you download that guide, guess what? It's mentioning Slack. It's positioning Slack as a solution. And because they've segmented the topic, this is all about engineering, they can tailor the content, they can tailor the sales messages to be for engineers. So it's a great way of getting on the radar of people who maybe don't know about you or don't know that you can solve the problem that they have. This also brings us nicely onto the topic of lead magnets, which are another type of content. Now, usually lead magnets are maybe the most useful content, or the content that has the most unique insight. And the job of a lead magnet, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but the job of a lead magnet is to magnet a lead, right? It's to get someone into your CRM, into your email marketing software in order to get a guide or get something that's useful to them. Once you've got them in your CRM, of course, then you can send them automated follow-up that moves them closer to the purchase. So think ebooks, webinars, white papers, survey results, a free website and marketing review from the team here at Exposure Ninja, wink, wink, which you can request at exposureninja.com/review. But whatever you're using as your lead magnet, it needs to be useful. It needs to be the type of thing that your audience is going to want to download or interact with in exchange for their content details. And as I said before, typically this is going to be some unique insight that they can't get elsewhere. It's really important that your lead magnet has enough perceived value to it that someone's going to submit their details. If you're just giving someone like the same information that they can get free without any sort of sign up on other websites, that's going to be a really ineffective lead magnet, because there's not enough of a bait there to someone to say, right, you know what, I'm going to risk getting email spam forever, and I'm going to fill in this form. Now, a great example of this is a white paper that we created for one of our clients, actually, just after the pandemic. So this client is a software company. They do some amazing work with helping people to manage their teams as they're coming into the office. And what we noticed is after the pandemic, a lot of the, we really jumped on the sort of hybrid workplace trend, because a lot of like office managers and facilities managers type people, they didn't know what was going on out in the world regarding like how often are people coming into work and how often are people working from home and how do you manage that sort of hybrid work thing, which was fairly new for a lot of organizations. So we piggybacked on that. One year we did an employee census where we did a big survey and a big study and compiled all the data. And then we the next year we did another report, which was all about the future of work, 8 trends in the workplace. And it's a sort of a transformation report on what was going on in the workplace. Now, this was great because this is the sort of data that people couldn't get elsewhere. And we produced it into this beautiful brochure that people could sign up with their email for to receive it. So it needs to be good enough that people are going to want to submit their details. Our recipe for success, by the way, here was we didn't gatekeep the study's key findings. We actually shared some of the study's key findings publicly because we knew that this was going to be interesting to lots of different publications. And we used this as the basis of a full campaign where we're doing, you know, digital PR and we're doing advertising across different platforms. We're ranking it organically as well. We're sending out through their email. We're marketing it across their website, you know, all that type of stuff. So in order to do that, we needed to share some of the key insights. The other thing that we did is we gave visibility to some journalists alongside collecting email addresses from leads. So we didn't require journalists to sign up for this. We sent them it so that they could see the sort of the insight behind this. We also worked with a very reputable study provider, YouGov, to show credibility to the study, because that's going to give journalists more confidence building stories around the data that was collected. We picked up 70 backlinks from this, which was obviously amazing, really helped the client's visibility. And of course, it got us a whole bunch of email signups as well. Another example of this type of thing, there's an accountancy firm that specializes in working with agencies. And every year they survey their clients and they survey their email list to get some details about what's going on in the world of agencies. And they ask some really deep questions about things like profitability and client retention and pricing, growth rates, what sort of agencies are doing well, what sort of agencies are struggling. The information that they collect is really valuable, and no agency owner otherwise has access to this type of information. So what they do is they compile all of this into a report that they call Bench Press Report, and they then use this as a lead magnet as a way of getting people into their world who are agency owners, obviously, to get this level of insight, which they can then, you know, start to sell their accountancy services to. Really smart example. They build a whole bunch of events and webinars around this and do a big push about this Bench Press Report. Okay, the next sort of tactic in your toolbox is going to be email marketing for nurturing. Email marketing is a massive content marketing superpower, but so many B2Bs have a mailing list that they kind of collect accidentally. They don't really have a strategy for it, or they're just sending stuff out to ad hoc. But of course, once we're running these lead magnets, once we've got people signing up for our email list, we want to make sure we've got a really bulletproof strategy to turn them into high quality leads over time. Particularly important in B2B, where sales cycles can take an average of 4 months, email can both help speed that up, but also help nurture those people along the sequence so that your sales team doesn't have to spend 4 months, you know, on the regular talking to each of these leads. Your sales team can focus on the people who are just coming in through the pipeline, or maybe you're most ready to convert, leaving the rest to your automation, or leaving the majority of the sort of automated follow-up to your automation sequences. Now, what you want to do here, of course, is you want to segment your list in as much detail as it makes sense to. Segmenting your list means that you can give highly targeted messages to each group of subscribers. What we don't want to do is just put everyone into one big old hopper and send them all the same old stuff, regardless of whether they're ready to purchase, regardless of whether they signed up for a newsletter or they requested a quote, or whether they've asked for a demo, or whether they're interested in one product but not another. We want to segment our audience according to their interests. Nothing is more of a turnoff to email marketing subscribers than getting a few emails from you that are completely irrelevant. What that does is that conditions system to start ignoring the stuff you're sending. And that's a really dangerous thing. Most of us are using email software that has some sort of machine learning where it learns the type of emails that you're listening to. And if they're not listening to your emails, if they're not reading them, you're going to end up in that promotions tab, which is sad times. So how you segment them obviously depends on your business. If you're we've got some B2B e-commerce clients, for example, we might segment based on the product category that someone's bought from. We run basket and browse abandonment sequences as well for our B2B e-commerce clients, which are strategies that are much more common in B2C e-commerce, but guess what? They apply just as much in B2B e-commerce. You might segment people based on whether they are booking a demo with you or whether they're just getting in contact or whether they're signing up through a pop-up form on your website to sign up for a newsletter. You might segment people based on particular lead magnets that they downloaded if those imply that they're a particular type of customer or they're interested in a particular type of service or they're in a certain industry. Basically, the goal of the segments is to share information that's relevant to each one. We don't want to send irrelevant stuff to any of our segments if we can possibly avoid it. Okay, next principle is repurposing old content. Not everything you make needs to be brand new. You might have a great ebook or a guide that you produced a few years ago, did really well, and it could do really well again if you tweaked it, gave it a bit of a refresh, a bit of a glow up to bring it up to speed. We have a book, How to Get to the Top of Google, all about SEO. We've updated it every year. I wrote the first edition of this thing in like 2012. Every year we update it. Even if some years the updates are fairly minimal, the point is that you can then run a bit of a campaign, a bit of awareness around the updated version of it so that we then send out emails to our list saying, if you've downloaded or bought the book, here are the key updates to be aware of. We might run some ads to people as well, now updated for the new year, whatever. But you can also repurpose old content in new formats. So we take some of the information from that book, we turn it into blog posts, into videos, into podcasts, into social posts, because once you've done the research once, it's a lot less effort to then turn that into multiple different formats. And we've got a great video on our YouTube channel, if I do say so myself, about repurposing content in your content strategy. So if you just go onto YouTube and search Exposure Ninja content strategy, you'll find that. The thumbnail is a big circle with loads of bright colors on it. It's really cool. Again, if I do say so myself, I didn't design the circle. My one looked terrible. Anyway, the next topic in our B2B content marketing lead generation journey is smart digital PR campaigns. As well as on-site content, the stuff that happens on your website, we need to talk about off-site content as well. And digital PR can be one of the best ways to get in front of your target audience whilst also building some really important links back to your website, which are going to help your ranking, even for commercial search terms as well. B2Bs often fall into a trap of either only targeting really tiny trade publications because they have the right audience, or only targeting huge, super authority, mega mainstream publications, okay? They often fall into the trap of only going after one of these. The real answer is you probably need both, right? Those high authority publications can be fantastic for link authority, for giving you credibility. The trade publications can be really useful for getting in front of your target audience. So try both of those. But whatever you're doing, of course, you need to be using the sort of topics and stories that are actually going to be interesting, right? You've got a new sales director. Great. You care about that. The rest of the world doesn't. In fact, the only people really who care about your new sales director are the sales director and the team that they're managing. Nobody else honestly cares. So let's not make some press releases and try and go out to the world with this information, because they just do not care. The energy that you'll expend trying to get coverage about your new sales director could be much more productively put to use promoting a story which is actually interesting and entertaining. So I'll give you a couple of angles that you can use here. Firstly, data-driven stories. So if you've collected some survey results or some insight, think about the bench press report, the future of work report, for example. These can be great topics to go out to journalists and publications about, because they can offer either statistics about a trend that people are already seeing, or they can provide thought-provoking statistics that maybe people haven't considered before. So that's the first type. The other type is just being a bit more creative about some of the insight, about some of the expertise that you have. So I'm going to tell you a story about a digital PR campaign that we ran for one of our clients years ago in pretty much the most boring industry I could think of. I still haven't found too many industries that are more boring than this. So they are a racking safety inspection company. So you got a warehouse. How do you know that your racking is safe? Well, it needs to be inspected to certify it as safe. This company goes into those warehouses and says, yes, your racking is safe. You are not going to have one of those disasters that we've all seen on TikTok or Instagram where all the racking collapses and makes a huge mess. So, all right, how do you get digital PR coverage for a business like that? I mean, it's pretty much as boring as it could possibly get, right? Well, what we did is we decided to, I think there was like a new Game of Thrones or there was a new Doctor Who or something like that. We decided to do a review of workplace safety from the perspective of a workplace safety inspector. So we produced this infographic, which compared like the safety in, Homer Simpson's nuclear power plant against Game of Thrones, against Doctor Who, against maybe Lord of the Rings or something like this. So we are piggybacking on stuff that was of interest to consumers, but we took our B2B expertise approach with it. And this got loads of coverage. And obviously it got loads of coverage from the sort of the trade press because they just longed to talk about something other than, you know, particular racking safety unique insights. They want to talk about fun stuff that people actually care about. But it also got some mainstream coverage as well, because again, it's something that's actually interesting to people. And whilst, you know, of course, every publication wants to talk about the new Game of Thrones or whatever that's out, to be able to approach that from the angle of, hey, here's what like a real workplace safety inspector talks about. That's a fun, original angle. So you're almost like taking a boring angle to something that's really interesting and making something that's super quirky. So it did really well for them. Another example here, I'm looking at a campaign from Shutterstock where they have reimagined all of the Game of Thrones houses as modern corporations. So they've got a designer to basically come up with some concepts for each of these houses. They've mocked up some pictures. They're pretty basic pictures like this. You know, it's a really creative campaign. It's not a huge amount of work, for sure. This is not a huge amount of work. But what it does allow them to do is to go out to different publications and shout about, hey, the new Game of Thrones is out or whatever. Here's the Game of Thrones houses reimagined as new brands. And everyone's like, oh, that's so clever, cool. And then they, you know, publish some stories about it. They link back to the website. Fantastic. It gets Shutterstock on the radar. It gets them some nice links and without being boring. So it builds a bit of personality around them as well. So Shutterstock have done this a few times. They jumped on some trends like the Fyre Festival, the popularity of Stranger Things. You've got to be aware to this. You've got to be alive. You've got to be looking out for what's trending if you're going to piggyback on it. So the final tip is optimizing this content for search. Optimizing your content for search is really important because it means that more people are actually going to see it. Some of the stuff that we've talked about today can be a fair amount of work. The last thing you want to do is put in all of that work only to find that, oh, you guess what? You got like 5 visitors from it and 4 of them were your mum. You need to make sure that this stuff is getting picked up and it's being ranked on Google for the sorts of terms that people actually care about. Now, we've covered this topic in a lot of detail in a different podcast. So go and click on the link in the description to listen to the B2B SEO video to learn more about this. If you haven't requested your free website and marketing review, please do. You can go to exposureninja.com/review. What we do in this review is we analyze your current digital marketing. We look at what you could be doing better. We look at what your competitors are doing really well that you can copy. We look at what your competitors are doing really poorly as well that you might be able to exploit and learn from their mistakes. We wrap all of this into a 15-minute video, which you can request at exposureninja.com/review. Not everyone is eligible, but if you're not eligible, you'll get something amazing instead. Until next time, see you soon.